the last several weeks have looked at service. How reaching out to help others is both God's will being done on earth and a path that draws us closer to God. We've considered that in reaching for God at different times in our lives, our calls may be different. Sometimes we may see God with our intellect, or we may simply approach God with an open heart, or we may choose to honor God through our actions, head, hands, and heart, or some combination of these, inform our path towards the light throughout our lifetimes. But sometimes there comes a time in a person's life when a perplexing question presents itself. How do we even know there is a God? Perhaps the questioner is thinking science and religion are at odds. Science hasn't located God, so where's the proof? Perhaps a fantastic Bible tale strains credulity. Jonah swallowed by a whale, you're kidding, right? And we're tempted to consider all the scriptures nothing more than a Bronze Age myth. Perhaps one is hurting from the loss of a loved one, or observing the suffering that exists in the world and wonders how a loving God could allow such things. So in a way, how do we know there is a God? It's a very logical question. And it's normal for this thought to come up. A practical way to deal with this question is to use a method called focusing on the ideal, which I'll explain in a minute. But first, let me point out some hidden assumptions in the question, how do we know there is a God? The first assumption is that God can be properly defined. If you're seeking the truth of God's existence, you must start with an acceptable definition of God. If you're doubting God's existence, you're actually doubting whatever definition you've chosen. Remember that G-O-D, God, is just a word. If you grew up believing that God is an old man with long hair and a beard, who wears a long white robe, reclines on a cloud throne, listening to angels play harp all day long, occasionally throwing thunderbolts at the earth, well, if that's your definition, I can understand why you might have doubts. Should we try for a better definition of God? Humble creatures that we are, gazing into the spiritual realm, are we even capable of defining God? Zen Buddhism uses koans, paradoxical anecdotes or riddles, like what is the sound of one hand clapping, that aim to provoke enlightenment while demonstrating the limits of logical reasoning. Here's a Zen expression that at first seems quite macabre. If you see Buddha on the road, kill him. This is intended to teach a deeper meaning, that every time we define the divine, we limit it. Preconceptions must be killed. When we say, that's what it is about God, we stop looking, we stop seeing. The true nature of the Buddha, or of the Christ, or of God, cannot be put into human language. A hard definition puts reality in a box for our convenience and prevents our being continuously open to the secrets of the universe. The transcendent, by its very nature, is ineffable. It cannot be put into words. It may be hard for some of us to accept mystery. We want all the answers right away. But it is better to keep our eyes wide open than to settle on easy answers. Here's how Pope Francis put it. If one has the answers to all the questions, that is proof that God is not with him. It means that he is a false prophet using religion for himself. The great leaders of the people of God, like Moses, have always left room for doubt. You must leave room for the Lord, not for our certainties. We must be humble. It is paradoxical, but a type of agnosticism, not knowing all the answers, is a healthy and necessary part of the faith journey. So we shouldn't let the question, how do I know there is a God, fool us into thinking we can pin down the nature of the universe. It's a fallacy to prematurely fix on a static definition of God And we wonder if the intellect, the mind of man, is in fact a proper organ for comprehending the divine. Yes, we said the head, along with the heart and the hands, is one of the paths that lead us to God. But remember, in discussing the yoga of the mind, the Hindus stress the intellect can point to God, but not take us all the way there. The purpose of using the intellect to see God is to move past the intellect. Asking the question, how do I know there is a God, and trying to answer it with the brain alone is a recipe for getting stuck in a thought loop with no means of escape. We need to engage other parts of our being besides just the brain. Here's an example of what I mean. When you meet a new person, you're actually receiving a massive amount of data all at once. And not all of it is processed on the thought level. In forming our reaction to the new person, we certainly use sight, smell, and hearing, but probably other subtler senses too. We may have thoughts, but a lot more is going on than we notice. We receive information and process it in many ways beyond thinking. Don't get me wrong, the human brain is one of the most remarkable things in the universe. It distinguishes us from our fellow creatures in the animal kingdom. It's a tool that has created civilization and put us on the moon. It seems to be limitless in its power. And yet this power that we sometimes control just as often seems to control us. From the moment we wake up, our thoughts drive our activities. And all the thinking that takes place in each of us as individuals creates a separation between us and the rest of the world. Our thinking mind, the highway of our everyday consciousness, is an amazing tool, but it is only one tool in the toolbox. Just like a screwdriver is not great for pounding in a nail, relying on everyday conscious thinking to apprehend the divine may be a stretch. You've heard the story of the drunk looking under the street lamp for his lost key. Okay, I'll tell it to you. A drunk is looking for his lost key under a street lamp. A passerby sees him and, trying to help, asks, "Where were you when you lost your key?" The drunk answers, "Well, I was down at the end of the block when I dropped it, but the light's better here." The light of the intellect is bright, but can shine only so far. Here's what the psychologist and philosopher William James had to say in his 1902 book, The Varieties of Religious Experience. "Our normal waking consciousness is but one special type of consciousness, whilst all about it, parted from it by the filmiest of screens, they're like potential forms of consciousness entirely different. We may go through life without suspecting their existence, but apply the requisite stimulus, and at a touch, they are there in all their completeness. No account of the universe in its totality can be final, which leaves these other forms of consciousness quite disregarded. How to regard them is the question, for they are discontinuous with ordinary consciousness. At any rate, they forbid our premature closing of accounts with reality." Think about the wonder of birds flying south. When it's too foggy for them to observe natural features, they scan the Earth's magnetic field for guidance. Humans also have organs of perception that are underutilized and states of consciousness available to us beyond the everyday. So this method I'm introducing today, called focusing on the ideal, uses the intellect in a discipline-directed way, but not by itself. It brings in other qualities we possess, like the will, the heart, and intuition. It's based on the notion that inside every human is something like a compass that points true north. It points to something we may call the ideal. The concept of the ideal seems very slippery, but that's what makes it amazing, because it works for everybody. Everybody has some general sense in their bones, perhaps hazy, perhaps crystal clear, of something to follow, something beckoning to them. An archetype of perfection they know exists somewhere, somehow. To me, it is spirit calling us home. But this idea will present itself a little differently to everybody. A scientist may be seeking truth with a capital T. The artist responds to beauty. Some are called by love, by goodness, purity, wisdom, awareness, energy. We follow these qualities, and in the end, we find they are the same. Many in this room see Christ as a pattern to follow. That is a wonderful ideal. Someone else's ideal may not be in religious terms at all, but focusing on the ideal always works. That's because there is a different path for each of us. The ideal presents itself in a way that speaks to each individual, and all paths lead to the same place. Your ideal may start out very vague. Is there a feeling you get when you're helping someone? Or a feeling you get taking in the perfect sunset? Yes, there is a rightness to something outside of the mundane, and it calls us. When we focus on it, the ideal will become clearer. Maybe your ideal is just a vague sense of following a glimmering light. The light will grow brighter. When we practice focusing on the ideal, it's like GPS. We are given step-by-step directions toward our target. We feel like getting closer, gaining clarity. There are many ways to work with your ideal. Some folks make lists. They write down their ideal as envisioned today. They write down behaviors to help them meet the challenge. They reflect on their progress. Some folks use the ideal in their prayer time to keep their spiritual goals in sight. Meditation, the practice that quiets our thinking, is a perfect opportunity for our deepest aspirations to come forward. To sum up, how do we know there is a God? Is a perfectly good question posed by the intellect. But the intellect does not provide all the tools necessary to answer the question. The good news is we don't have to be stuck on mental puzzles. But everyone has the ability to move steadily toward a spiritual ideal which presents itself in one guise or another to each of us. Focusing on the ideal is an inward journey, a centering journey, using information about the universe that each of us already has as a starting point. Take the first step. Focus on your ideal and follow the path it reveals. As the Master has assured us, knock, and the door will be opened.